When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, big win, Kings fans. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Tonight, we are talking about the stellar road trip, Hiller's tenure. The Clark train is at full speed. PLD stock is rising in the return of Victor Arvidsson. Get in the chat, like, and subscribe. Let's go. I almost said killer tenure, but it has been a killer tenure so far for Jim Hiller, and we'll get into that. But before we start going down the line, thank you guys for being in the chat. 601 right there. CJ, first one in here. People pay to watch me play Jack Hughes to Victor Arvidsson. Eye roll. Shankmaster coming here. Let's go. Evening, y'all. What a great couple of days. Go Kings, go. A sigh right here. What a great couple games here. Never down and out. Reminded me of the comeback Kings of past. Love Hiller's ability to make game changes quickly. We will be talking about that. Great trip, road trip, except Buffalo. Bill's already forgotten Buffalo. Bill, Buffalo's a distant memory. So now coming here with a sup, y'all. Sup to my co-host here, Joe Russell. How you guys doing?
Doing good, doing good. Yeah, fun weekend of hockey. I mean, I don't know if you guys did, but I tuned into both the Stadium Series games. Last night's game wasn't as, exciting in terms of finish, but the game today, it's kind of watching a little bit of the end of the Rangers Islanders game as the Kings game was going on, and that was a crazy finish. But I mean, and when couple that with the two Kings games, man, fun weekend of hockey. How you doing, Joe?
Good. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't catch either of the stadium games. Unfortunately, you know, it was a busy day, busy weekend at the house here locally. Then today, trying to get to the Rochester game with my older son. We watched a little bit of Brant Clark's brother with Utica and the Devils farm system. So that was a good time. But that's a hell of a way to bounce back for the Kings after the shellacking in Buffalo, to bounce back the way they did against, you know, two good teams and certainly not a bad Penguins team, but that's a good way to end it. That's for sure. Good way to end it. Randon, how you doing?
Good. Good. Yeah. Birthday weekend. Thank you guys for the stick taps on Twitter. Appreciate that. Was a little sick on the actual day, but, you know, rebounded. Been drinking Pedialyte nonstop to get the electrolytes back in me. But overall, it's been good. A couple of good gifts. And, you know, went to a steakhouse dinner last night, went to some barbecue today. They have this barbecue spot by my house has burnt end pancakes, and they make out of the tallow. They make some like cream that goes on top of pancakes, and they have maple syrup. It's to die for. So interesting. Some hardcore barbecue brunch going out here in Fort Worth. So okay, so I like it.
That's great.
Okay, so let's get into it. First off, you know, we win against Penguins tonight. Jaromír Jágr getting his number retired. Well justified. Everybody wearing the mullets, which I thought was kind of cool. But great game. Juice gets back off the Schneid with two goals tonight. One, just, you know, throwing it on net. Good things happen when you throw it on net, and a little shorty there. So let's get into the game tonight, obviously, and it's a part of Hiller's tenure, so we'll kind of fade that in there. The game tonight, what did you guys think about the Kings? Obviously, fourth game in six nights, back-to-back. So all the reason the Kings could have lost this game, and they pull up the W.
Yeah, out of all the games on the road trip, this one was the one where I don't know who I was talking to, but I mean, after the emotional kind of way they ended the game in Boston, to go into Pittsburgh where, like you said, they're retiring Jaromír Jágr's number. It's going to be an emotional night for them. You knew they were going to be amped up for it. And it kind of felt like a sleepy game for it too. But I was like, if they ended up losing, they go 2-2 in the trip, that's fine. Cool. They end up pulling it out. I mean, I'm watching it, and it just felt like, man, the first period was so-so. Kings started off pretty well. Penalties kind of taken by Dubois. Say what you will about them. I thought the second one was probably a good call. First one was whatever. But second period, super sleepy. And then you're watching it, too, with Kent, with all the mix and matches that Hiller's doing throughout the lines. Man, you saw Moore on the top line. You saw Kaliev on the top line. Fiala back on with Dano and Arvidsson. Everything going on. And especially like Adrian Kempe, too. The last few games, it just seemed like he had been, I don't know, gripping his stick too much, if that's what you want to use, just struggling a bit. And there was one play that happened, I think it was the third period, where just trying to make a pass down low or try to throw it toward the net, and he just had a shot blocked, pass or shot blocked. And it seems like that has been happening so much with him lately. And I'm like, man, it seems like Juice has been struggling. And sure enough, yeah, like you said, Brandon, just comes right on the ice and throws that clapper, bounces a couple times, beats Jari. And then his second goal is just sweet. Like, I mean, the play by Kopitar to set up that shorty for Kempe to scream down the wing like that, money pass. Kempe beats Jari five hole, like Jim Fox says, tweeners. So, excellent way to end it. Excellent way to end the road trip. Exciting.
Yeah, I really like the Kings today. Like, I remember at the end of the first period, you know, I know they were down, but I thought this is a really good road game on the second of a back-to-back long road trip, but they played well. They're in the game. And again, I thought the second was good too. It honestly felt like something, there's going to be a goal coming here. You know, obviously as the game wears on, you're like, well, maybe is it just not their night or whatever, but I thought the Kings played a really, really good road game, especially under the circumstances of, like I said, the long trip, the second of a back-to-back. I thought this was an excellent performance from the Kings, to be honest with you. So really, really happy. To me, that's a really nice way. And you look at the way I mentioned the Buffalo game earlier, but their responses from each of the games following that have been outstanding. And I think, you know, I go back to, I think a lot of people are going to talk about these weekend games. And I get it. To me, it's the Jersey game. Like, you get beat up, you fire the coach, you have a lengthy break, you have an emotional win against Edmonton, your rival, back at home in Hiller's first game, you get that win, things maybe are trending upwards, you at least get a little bit of relief, you hit the road, and then you lose 7-0. I mean, that could go a lot of different ways. But to show up and then win in New Jersey against a team who I know has been battling a lot themselves this year with injuries and whatnot. They're a little bit disappointing, but that's a really, really good roster and a really good hockey team. To beat them after the ass whooping that they just got, that win right there is the one that, it, you know, I guess if I were to look back later in the season, that's the one where it's like it could have gotten away from them right then and there, and it didn't. They kind of stopped the bleeding and then just kind of kept things going on. So I'm really, really happy with how they've kind of responded to some tough situations, right? The loss to Buffalo, the comebacks against Boston, the comeback here against Pittsburgh. So they've dealt with a lot in this road trip, and they've come out of it really well.
And they're going to continue to deal with a lot. I just looked at the schedule. They're going to have 7 games in 10 days, yeah. Like this road trip, and then the homestand. There's back-to-backs on. I mean, that's a lot of hockey. So, you know, they're going to have some tribulations, and each game had a different, you know, we had the overtime monkey on our back that we haven't won a game in overtime in a long time, or a shootout. And you know, before we get into that, Nav coming in here with drinks on me, Randon. Happy belated birthday. Thank you for the $10 there, buddy. I will spend it wisely. So I mean, you know, getting in the Boston game, huge game for the young blood. Clark Train in full effect. So let's get to that game. Obviously, big goal for the kid, first NHL goal. And Russ, you were tweeting about it, so I'll let you talk about it. You know, first rookie, this and this and that. What was the significance of this goal? And just, you were on the live stream. How did that go about?
Oh man, that live stream was fun. Yeah. First of all, thanks to everybody that tuned in. That was a great time. I had a bunch of people in there. Even some Oilers fans that were chirping me throughout, but it was a great time. And the way they ended, it was excellent. Yeah. I mean, that game overall, just, it was resiliency, right? It was just the Kings just bouncing back, punches, trading back and forth. Big challenge by Hiller in the first period. I thought Kings maybe caught a break there, to be honest with you. I didn't see a lot there.
Yeah.
I understand, like, yeah, what do you think of that, Joe? Like, I see you're shaking your head. It's like, I understand maybe he clipped his skate and probably caused Riddick to be off balance a little bit. And even just that slight like infraction, I guess, would probably cause him to miss it.
I think, first of all, I had the slightest idea. I think he corrected himself after the fact. Jackson, the referee there, the on ESPN's broadcast, said that he went in on his own. I mean, Mikey Anderson clearly pushed him into the crease. Like that was, I have still have no idea what he was talking about. But it is on kind of DeBrusk to make his, I guess, to make his way out of there. I think he had time to do so. And listen, it's goalie interference. I don't think anybody really has a clue. So I thought that it was worth the challenge, if only if it was simultaneous where the shot's coming, Anderson pushes him into Riddick, then to me, it's a goal. Anderson is the one that did it. But Anderson pushes him into the crease, not into Riddick. And it's really DeBrusk as he's kind of making his way out that kind of just ever so slightly does enough to Riddick. So honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if that went either way. But I think it was obviously hindsight being 2020, but I thought it was a good challenge just because of the time that elapsed between Anderson pushing him into the crease and the shot and eventual goal coming, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, 100%. I think it's a good challenge too because you also have like a really good penalty kill. You have the best penalty kill in the league. So if it is a 2-0 deficit at that point, then you kind of rely on your good penalty kill. But even then, I just surprised because, I mean, for the refs to make the call on the ice, that's a goal, and then overturn that. I mean, like you said, Joe, we were talking like slight contact here. We're not talking like he shoved him in and Riddick is falling over. Like he kind of fell. But even then, take it, right? Yep. And that was kind of like – it was just good to see the Kings just bounce back. You saw like – and everybody making a play. We saw Matt Roy score. We saw LeFerrier score. Dubois played really well. Byfield had a point again. So – I mean, just the entire, like the whole time, and especially when he goes to overtime, you're thinking like, and that savvy goal by Kopitar and Doughty, it's just like, man, just Doughty knows like those are two minds that know exactly what each other's doing at that moment. Doughty knows, I'm going to throw this on at a decent amount of speed just so Kopitar can get a touch on it. And Kopitar knew exactly what Doughty was doing, perfect way to tie it. And then our boy Brent Clark, or Randon's boy Brent Clark, he's been running that steam engine all season long. Finally hops on board with Deneau making that nice little bounce pass. I mean, Randon, what were you thinking when you saw Brent Clark and that breakaway goal?
I mean, I was sitting there. So I'm sitting there on the couch, you know, kind of getting over the sickness, and I'm just kind of laying there and like, oh, man, overtime, you're not too happy about it. You know, like this is
probably right, not going to go well. Right, and just like, oh, here we go.
And then you're like, oh, penalty. Oh, I got 4-3. And I was like, okay, we can just ride this out and get to the shootout. You know, maybe – we have a chance. And then it's like, okay, cool. Like it ended. And then the puck kind of floats. And I'm like, he's loose. like, oh my God. Like I was just like cheering on a horse at like the Kentucky Derby. I was kind of like doing the, come on, man. And then just can opener, just whipped him open. And I was in my apartment, just like you were on the live stream, just fist pump in the air and stuff that. It was great, man. Like he deserved it. And the whole team, he's pumping down, the whole team's clearing off the ice, and perfect. Whoever took that photo of the entire bench while he was going down, like everybody's like the mixed emotions. Like somebody were stern, some people were like wide open. You guys, Turcotte was like, come on, man. Like young guys pulling each other on, you know, like it was, oh man, it was just perfect. And that's why you draft a kid. Like that's the Brent Clark that ever, and not afraid of the moment. I mean, it didn't look like, I mean, his face was glued. Like he was ready to go and buries it. Like no, it was pure decisive movement. No hesitation whatsoever.
That was pretty.
To make that move against Linus Ullmark. I mean, I don't know if you're thinking of the goaltender at the time, but for him to make that kind of move, normally you see young players that probably in that moment would just try to beat him with a wrist or something too. This guy was taking move.
This is the best part of these young kids. I think of it the other way around. Like, I want the young guy on the breakaway because I think they're much more, especially Clark, the confidence he's much more willing to just kind of be free flowing. That was fantastic. I want to go back to something quickly that Russ said. You mentioned Dubois' name. You mentioned LeFerrier scored. So thoughts here. You know, we talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois, all season long right now. And we've talked about his wingers, right? And we've talked about getting him somebody else. Like I think we generally like LeFerrier. I know I do. I think that's that duo has been really good together. It's just, who is that other piece? Kempe was there for a minute, seemed to work okay, but McClellan went away from it. And I know I'd wanted to see Trevor Moore. I would have been open to Byfield. And so Byfield is the one that plays here with Dubois and LeFerrier. I love it. I think this is doing exactly what we were hoping it would do. And me personally was hoping it would do that, more kind of north-south speed of Byfield is a good complement to the other two players, particularly Dubois. Dubois seems more engaged for whatever reason, but he is. And I think that line arguably is the team's best line right now. I think they are absolutely buzzing. You look at just their numbers from today per Natural Stat Trick, that was the one line that played more than anybody. They played over 9 minutes of 5-on-5, 15-6 in shot attempts, and they had a 55-56% expected goal share. And through the season, when those three have been together, it's only been 28 minutes, they've got a 68.8 in possession, 70% expected goals. Again, I know it's only 28 minutes, but boy, I really think that getting a guy with the motor of Byfield is really pulling a lot out of that line. And then you're starting to see a little bit more finish, right? LeFerrier scores the other day. Dubois set up a goal. I think Gavrikov scored. It was Dubois that picked up the assist on that. So, like, guys are finishing. That was a big part of the problem with Dubois when it comes to his production, is he had nobody finishing. Go look at the shooting percentages of him on the ice. It was a constant theme all season. Like, he needed to be more engaged, and I don't think we disputed that. But there was also a faction of people that were just blatantly ignoring all the good things that he was doing. And we're starting to see some of that come to fruition in terms of production with some pucks going in. So just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the line of Byfield playing here with Dubois and LeFerrier.
I don't like that you cut Clark's moment in the sun very short there, Joe. So I don't like that at all. Not one bit. I like the new production, right? Before tonight's game, he was a point per game player since Hiller has been there. So yeah, he's John, but it's 4 or 5 games. I'm not letting him off the hook yet.
Sure.
And he's playing better, and that's good. I do like, also, I'll tell you what I do like. I do like the fact that sometimes he rotates Byfield up and puts Kempe down there. Sometimes it's Kempe up with Kopitar and Byfield down there. Like, they're not afraid to mix it up mid game based on what they need. They were talking about on the broadcast, like, hey, he doesn't want the top three lines sitting because, like, Fiala and Arvidsson don't play any penalty kill. So if they have a couple special teams, they want to get that line back out there, and he'll switch the wingers up just to get people out on the ice until things settle down, and then he'll rotate the lines the way they were intended. Which, I don't know if T-Mac was doing that or not doing that, but it seems, after the announcer said it, it seemed to be catching my eye more. And maybe that's the red car theory, when you don't see any red cars until somebody says, hey, look for red cars, right? But I think it's working, and I think the lines are shifting more, and I think Hiller is doing a good job at adjusting mid-game, even mid-period, to certain things with that.
Yeah, I think the common denominator here we're talking about with who are the good lines going, it's Quentin Byfield. This guy.
You're not wrong.
Man. We have something special in LA. Like, I'll say that. Like, this kid is I say it all the time. You just have to remind yourself he's 21 years old, just by the way he presents himself, the way he talks, and the way he plays. Just like, every time you see Byfield on the ice, I'm like, oh, I feel pretty good right now. Something good's gonna happen at this moment. He's just using his speed, he's using his forechecking ability, his length, his power, his strength, everything. Everything that was on his scouting report is coming right into our eyes right here in front of us. It's been excellent to see. And yeah, the combination with him and Dubois, it makes absolute sense that it's working, right? I mean, what we've seen Byfield be one of the few players who's not afraid to go to the front of the net at all these last probably this whole season, actually. So for a player like Dubois, who's constantly looking for somebody in front of the net or in the slot, that match should work out pretty well. And it has. I mean, you look at that. I mean, that goal on in New Jersey, that power, it's a power play goal. But even then, I thought that goal, tying or winning goal, I guess, by Byfield, assisted by Dubois and Clark. That's like Dubois made a great play along the wall, using his strength, getting it to Clark. And I think like so much happens that play that it just kind of exemplifies each player's strength that was involved in that moment. I mean, you see Dubois using his puck protecting ability, getting the puck to Clark. And just in the handful of games that we've seen from Clark, he has a great knack for getting shots through the net to the net. And it's such a simple thing, but it's huge, especially when you have a big body like Quentin Byfield. And that goal that Byfield scored in New Jersey, I still think the Montreal goal is my favorite one so far of Byfield's career, just the way he drove around Caden Gooley and kind of put him in a washing machine there. It was great. But then that goal that he scored to take the lead in New Jersey, that might be my second favorite because it exemplifies everything that he's so good at, his strength, his body positioning, and those hands that he uses to put the puck in the net just in that tight of space. It was just beautiful. But yeah, I've been loving those two together. And yeah, like we're all big fans of Le Ferrier, so it's been a fun line to watch.
Brandon, I'm bringing the Clark back. I'm bringing Clark back for a second, so you're going to like this because I'm glad Russ just said this. Because I kind of
you like how I brought in a little bit more Clark. I was like, you got to sprinkle a little bit more Clark.
I'm bringing it full circle because I'm glad that you said that, Russ. I was thinking about that today watching the Penguins game. Is Clark's not only his ability to get pucks through, especially on the power play, because you know it's his willingness. Because you also have to have a guy that's up at the top that's not afraid or not hesitant to put a puck toward the net. And what he's doing is you see he's not winding up. He's not taking the hardest shot you've ever seen. He's making a quick play with his feet to get himself into space, to get himself into a shooting lane. And so a puck can get through. So he beats that top killer. He can get the puck through. And then again, he's going to do that if there's traffic, if there's a lane to get it through. And I'm glad you said that because that was something I wanted to make sure I noted today because I noticed it against Pittsburgh especially. And yeah, that's a really, really good thing. So Jordan Spence, not to say Spence necessarily wasn't doing that, but this is kind of why I like the idea of Spence, God forbid, in the same lineup. Because imagine, because with Clark's ability and willingness, like I said, to put a puck through from the top, okay, Spence has much more of a howitzer. He's got the one-time clapper. If Spence is on that left flank, the killers now have to respect both because Clark has shown a willingness to put pucks through. But Spence is going to have the hammer. So I really think that could open up so much more if you have Spence over there on that left side. I know we'll never see it because, God forbid, but I imagine the possibilities of those two on that second power play because just of their willingness and Clark's ability to get pucks through in sometimes high traffic areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that too, especially in the Boston game and in most games where he sometimes the power play, it'll be pass, and you're like, okay, where's the shot? Where's the shot? And he'll be like, okay, we need to get something towards the net to create some chaos. And it works, and you saw that in every level that he's at. And he, like you said, Joe, it's like a nice little changeup. He just like throws a circle change up there and just gets the defense off kilter because they're expecting a hard shot. The goalie's expecting a hard shot, and then it kind of just throws it the wrong way, and you get a tip from Byfield, and you know, to score that goal on the assist in the Boston game. So he's still growing, but I don't think that he should ever be in the press box ever again. And that sucks for Spence because Spence is the defenseman leading the team in assists. So
neither of them should be. Neither of them should be. You're
it's
right,
so stupid Randy. That we've gotten to this point where now there are people, they're like, I'm hearing like what, like people compare the two, like, oh, Clark is better than Spence. Like nobody's doubting that Clark probably has a higher ceiling than Spence and maybe even is a better player than Spence right now. but there's no reason that we can't play both. They're on the same, they're on the same roster. There's a reason, like, you can have them both in the same in the lineup at the same time. So it's dumb that it's come to this point, because we've almost all kind of expected this change to just have this rotation just continue, which makes no sense. It makes no sense. I mean, you're talking, I mean, I can envision like Clark quarterbacking the second power play unit, even if you want to take LeFerrier off it. I don't know who's on it now, actually, but they moved Byfield to the second. Yeah. But if you can have Clark on the top and you have Spence, that one time option on the right side or on the left side as a righty, I mean, like, it sounds too good. It sounds too good.
Yeah. And then Dubois can be on the right with QB down. And I think they've got more in the bumper or Deneau sometimes, that they've used both in the bumper there. So, like, I mean, crazy. It's crazy talk. I know it's crazy, but
Kings don't like to have nice things.
No,
just like makes you wonder.
The sad thing is, they have the nice things.
We need to, next show, we need to bring back the tinfoil hat segment to talk about this a little bit more, because that it's the only reason that they're not doing it at this point. It just makes no sense.
You mean like this tinfoil hat question? Do we use Spence for trade bait?
I've gotten to the point where I'm just so against it. Like,
I'm going to tell you right now, if they trade Spence because they need to play Andreas Englund. Guys, I got nothing. Now, again,
riots in the streets.
With the caveat of, like, because same thing with Roy. I'm not trading Roy either, okay?
Yeah.
But unless you're bringing in a top four LD, like, then you can sell me on it. If you're – it just depends what's coming in. Like, you know what I mean? So I'll put that caveat out there. But holy hell, if you're trading somebody with the caliber and the youth and the age and the contract and the team control of Jordan Spence, you better be getting a top four D or a number one goalie. And then even then, it'll hurt. Because then you still have to play Englund. So you know what I'm saying?
Like, back. I can't believe you said you trade Spence for goalie. I can't believe that just came out of your mouth.
There's one goalie that I would do it for, and that's UC Saros. And even then,
It's because you have his tattoo on your right thigh. You see him every day.
so like that's it though. So if you're trading him for the sake of that's the thing. The Spence thing, I don't really buy. Like, I can buy more of a Roy trade because it opens up money. Spence doesn't open up any money. So you're just trading a really talented player
for a prospect. For what?
So unless, again, he would have to be the centerpiece of a deal that brings in a top four lefty or a UC Saros. So other than that, I am not on board with trading Jordan Spence. I'm sure as hell not on board with playing Andreas Englund over Jordan Spence, but this is the situation that we're in. So I think the question is very fair, though, that whoever it was, I apologize, that asked the question, because what conclusions could you be coming to other than maybe are we seeing a potential for a Roy or a Spence trade, as dumb as that is, given who they're choosing to play over him? But that's where we're at. So it's a fair question.
Well, Joe, go with your tweet earlier today. About the zone exits, right? So the Kings have three players in the bottom 10 in zone exits, and three of the top guys in the league in zone exits are per 60 or something like that, were Clark, Spence, and Mervara. We have three in the bottom.
The first one, so Michael Clifford at Slim Cliffy said that it's very worrisome to him that the Kings have three of the bottom 10 worst percentages in terms of failed exits. So guys that just simply don't get pucks out of the zone. And Andreas Englund is dead last in the NHL. Matt Roy is down there, and Mikey Anderson. We've talked about this. Like, we love what Mikey Anderson and Matt Roy can do. Neither of them are going to be confused with smooth puck movers and all that stuff. That doesn't sound to say that they can't do other things well, but half your decor can't get pucks out or haven't gotten pucks out at an effective rate. Then I was just poking around Natural Stat Trick, And again, sample size consider here with Clark, Moverari, and Spence, but the top three defensemen on the LA Kings in individual scoring chances. So scoring chances for these three individuals among defensemen per 60 minutes, Brant Clark, Jacob Moverari, Jordan Spence. Again, not all that surprising. And again, I'm continue to be baffled by the
matches reluctance.
It does. I continue to be baffled by the reluctancy to give Moverari a fair shot in that LD3, you know, position. I know he's been hurt recently, but all that to say, like
back with the rain, I think he got 3 points in his first night back or something.
He's a good player. I mean, he's a good player. He's an underrated puck mover. So I think he fits just as well. So I just think that, because I'm very curious to see as we approach the deadline, if they do look to upgrade Englund or if they're just legit going to roll with him, because I do have serious concerns when you've got a decor the way the Kings are built. You guys know I've had a problem with the way this decor has been built for a long time. That's not beating Dallas, in my opinion. They can't handle the speed that Dallas brings at them. So
I haven't seen a win in Dallas in like 4 years. So, you know, like I said, in the last spot, if they have four home games here, guaranteed.
I'm taking a step back. I'm like, okay, the matchup entering today, I haven't seen after the Pittsburgh game, but entering today was, I believe we would play Dallas. The Kings would play Dallas. I don't like it. I don't like that matchup. You know, that's my concern is you have a decor that is built to kind of like
it still is.
Okay. So you have a decor that's built to get, you know, zone entries or block zone entries. But if a team can get in, you have to be able to get pucks out. Now, obviously it's not all that jarring that two of the guys on that list for the Kings are left D. Like, the way the Kings want to do it, if they're able to get the 1-3-1 set up, is they force them to the left side. So the puck, that's when Anderson and Englund and Gavrikov can be aggressive, force the dump, and the right shot D can, mm-hmm. you know, can make a play out of the zone. That's ideal. But that's not always going to happen. So I just continue to have concerns about the decor. And that's, you know, that's where I'm at right now.
I'm going to ask you this, Joe, because you brought up an interesting point about, like, I've been seeing more and more rumblings about the Kings looking for a new goaltender. Mm-hmm. And I guess it makes sense, like, with some things that have been going on. I mean, Talbot played pretty good today, but even then he's kind of been struggling. And Riddick he's been good, but you never know, probably. I'm not going to say that they need to go out and get a goaltender, but mm-hmm. I understand their conversations.
Sure.
Let's play. Why don't we just do a tinfoil hat segment? Let's have some fun here. What would you think that the Kings are a better team with a right shot defensive core of Doughty, Clark, and Spence, and with a goalie of Saros, or would you just roll with what you're rolling with now? So I'm saying, would you trade Roy and package? So
basically, Roy in a package for yeah.
For
I think the Kings, I think I would do it.
Interesting.
If it's Saros, yeah. I would do it. Now, depends on the rest of that package because, again, it's tough, right? Roy, what makes Roy difficult?
They're asking a lot, too, apparently.
Oh, of course they are. He's a 28-year-old.
He's got one more year left.
More year at $5 million. So, yeah, of course. So you figure, what is the rest of that? Because Roy is a pending UFA in his late 20s. Mm-hmm. Not an offensive defenseman, very, very like, you know what I mean? So I just don't know what he nets. Because Roy is one of those guys that you could see that's dealt from a team that's out of the playoffs going to a contender. That's not the Kings. So the Kings, in order to deal Roy, you have to get something of value back. So whether that's Saros, but if you're getting Saros, boy, are you adding a lot to that package. Right. What else is going there? Is it Kaliev? You know, there's going to be a lot more to that package. Yeah. Whereas if you go Roy, you go for a defenseman, you know, something like a Chychrun, we'll throw that name out there again. But again, it's tough to do because if you're Ottawa, you need more. Because
you probably Roy have to find a third team in all this, right? Or even just trade Roy and then...
Or be willing to add to the package. Like, if it is Roy plus a piece, Roy plus Kaliev plus a pick enough for Chychrun, for example. And I say Kaliev, insert young player, insert prospect. It doesn't have to be Kaliev. I'm just throwing his name in there. But you know what I mean? Something, it's Roy... who at least the team that's getting him has an opportunity to sign him, plus a young player who's under team control, plus a pick. Like, is something like that get something done? And if you can't do that, I'm not trading Roy then. You know, and I know people don't like the idea of losing something for nothing, but the Kings are in a playoff spot, and I do like Matt Roy. So I'm not trading him. On same thing with Spence. Like, I said earlier with Spence, like, unless you're getting something of value, and to me, where the Kings, I think the Kings could use a top four defenseman. So if they, but I don't know how you get one of those without trading, you know, like a Jordan Spence or something. So that gets really tricky. And again, the goaltending market, I'm not trading for a goalie unless it's Saros. I don't think like
Markstrom. Perfect for the Kings right now because of his contract, and
it helps that he's got 1 year left at a good number, and he's still young enough to where I don't want the Kings to get stupid with Saros, but like, you know what I mean? Like, he's young and he's.
I think he'll want it. He'll want it 8x8 or 8x8.5. Like, you got
probably.
He'll want a deal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, Randon. You're right, and I'm not.
But that's why I say like his contract is like perfect for the Kings because. Yeah. They still have Kopitar for two more years at $7 million. I mean, their cap space is really limited for probably the next year or two. So if you can find a way to squeeze in Saros, because what is Saros' contract? Like $5 million?
Five.
Which, that's, I mean, fine. This year and next year, $5 million for Saros?
Yep.
I'll take it. I mean, especially when you have no goaltender signed for next year.
But obviously that means Roy's the one that's got to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless there's a surprise, right? Unless there's a surprise. Yeah. I will say this, though. I sense that all the talk of the goaltending stuff, I don't know. I think I've heard Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts say it. I just will believe it when I see it, I think. Like, the Kings... I don't know. Because I don't know what other goaltenders would be out there that would be worth... spending assets for. Like, if it's Saros, like, hey, if you got an opportunity to get Saros, try to shoot your shot. But otherwise, like, I'm not going after Jake Allen. You know, I'm not going after somebody like that. You know, I don't think the Kings should.
Your boy Markstrom's kind of been floating out there.
He's interesting. I don't know why the Devils haven't done that yet. They're just I don't know what they're waiting for. I am interested in Markstrom, although I don't know how many years he's got left on his deal. His is a little more. I think his is 6 years. There's six. He's got two years left at $6 million. So that's a little bit heavier. But I mean, I like him. I think there's going to be other teams, like I said, New Jersey, that just needs to get that done way more of a priority than the Kings do. So
Markstrom is Calgary's goaltender. I see Nick asking in the chat. Just wanted to
Barring one of those two, like, who else are you going to really trade for that? Is that genuinely that much of an upgrade? Because you mentioned the penalty kill earlier. The Kings have their penalty kill save percentage would be a top 10 5-on-5 save percentage, which says two things. Their penalty kill goaltending has been incredible, and two, probably not that sustainable, but like, the goaltending isn't an issue. The goaltending is fine, right? It's not a problem. So I don't think the goaltending is the number one priority right now. Like, I know they're not the sexiest of names, but I just don't think, like, I think they need a defense. I think that's if they're going to go shopping in the deadline. I know they're tight against the cap, so they may not be able to and whatever. Defenseman is where I'm shopping.
Yeah, if you can flip Roy somehow, like, that's the thing. It's a hard trade because I think you mentioned it. He's a pending UFA. So most of the time when you're making trades, when teams are trying to upgrade the deadline, they're trading future assets for established talent. And now we're talking about trading established talent for established talent. So
let me ask you guys, would a trade of Roy, Kaliev and a pick, we'll say a second or maybe a conditional second for...
It'd probably have to be a first, no?
Maybe for Jacob Chychrun. Who says no?
Chychrun. Oh, for Chychrun?
I'm saying for Chychrun. So if it's Roy Kaliev and a second, who says no? Ottawa or Los Angeles?
I think Ottawa says no. Yeah. Because they're looking for future. I think...
I don't
unless
think
they
so.
Can figure out a way to re-sign Roy, if they're talking like, okay, we can re-sign, because Ottawa needs a player like Matt Roy. They need like someone Agreed. Who can help out, like a Shabbat or Sanderson. But
you're getting a future too in that deal in Kaliev and a pick, and you have the opportunity to perhaps sign Roy. And I don't think they're
looking in the press box. Like, what do you really have in him? Like, there's no videotape of him this year, really.
I don't think Ottawa's selling. I think they're retooling. I don't think you're going to see like them sell off.
No, doesn't want to sell. Yeah.
I don't think they should. I think they can retool, and I don't even think they should trade Chychrun, by the way. I think that's pretty stupid, but if they're going to, I'm going to listen. So I'm just again throwing stuff out there, and I don't know what other defenseman. I know we've talked about Byram in the past because Colorado may look at some other things. They're looking for a center and all that stuff. So again, this is the tinfoil hat segment. So just throw whatever at the wall and see what sticks.
Speaking of throwing whatever the wall, that's how I like to gamble. And our sponsor here is DraftKings. So DraftKings here, bet anytime you want here with DraftKings. Just bet $5 on any single game and get $200 in bonus bets like you did for the Super Bowl. DraftKings is your number one sports betting partner of the NHL. So DraftKings, download DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL, with code THPN. The crown is yours. So you said tinfoil hat about getting a trade. What about an addition by subtraction? Is the team better if they just trade Roy for picks or prospects or whatever just to get his – you didn't even let me finish there, Joe. You're just nodding me off over there. Man. But to get Clark and Spence on the ice at the same time, right? And then you make a secondary move because now you have cap space, you have some futures, you have like a team like Nashville has no use for Matt Roy if they're going to sell off, right? So maybe it's a two-step process rather than a one-step process.
No, I think I honestly think it's a valid conversation and a valid point. I mean, we're talking about we're hyping up Jordan Spence so much, and that's not – and so there's a reason for that. He's been really good this year. And Joe said he led the – he's leading the team in assists and all that good stuff. So I feel like losing Roy for future assets and not getting anything that would impact the team now makes the team worse. I'll say that. If you have to bring in Clark and Spence on the right side, I think, and you lose Roy, I think it makes the team worse. I don't think it makes them – like that much worse where it's going to be like not a playoff team or couldn't probably even make noise in the playoffs. But that's the thing right now for the Kings.
I disagree. I think they're better with both of them on the ice.
They're better. Okay. Well, I think they're slightly better with Matt Roy on the roster. And if they're trying to win right now, I think Roy gives you a better chance to do that on the roster. So that's my answer.
Joe, I think I would lean to the Roy in Randon's question about trading him for assets, trading Spence for assets.
Roy for assets.
I'm sorry, Roy. Sorry. That's what I meant. I think the Kings would be they're better in the way that they are currently built. Because, again, you have Anderson, Gavrikov, and England. I think that Roy and Gavrikov have been a good. I know Roy has played a bit now more recently with England at times when Clark's been in the lineup. I think Roy is a good defenseman. I think he helps the Kings. I think he's a stable defenseman. I appreciate the question. I think it's a very legitimate question. It's a shame that we have to have it because the organization is just choosing to make us have this conversation rather than just put England in the press box. But Randon, I think
there's not like, I just don't think it's a, Like, it's a hockey trade. Unless the team that you're trading for is willing to make two moves. I think two moves have to happen. No team that's trading away a serviceable player is going to take Roy unless they're, one, going to extend him, or two, trade him away.
Yeah.
Like, if Ottawa traded, if he's in this hypothetical for Chychrun, then Ottawa's just going to flip him for another player or for picks or for whatever. I mean, he's almost 30. Like, if Ottawa is going to be contending, like, I don't think it's next year. I don't even think it's the year after. So, like, is Roy really going to help you in that championship window? Probably not. So then maybe you flip him to a team that is in a championship.
He also has to choose to sign there, right? It's like, does he want to play in Ottawa?
Right.
So, like, I think there's too much. I think it's either we have to make two moves to make it happen, or another team has to make it two moves. Or, like you said, Russ, a three-team trade where everybody gets what they want. But it's not going to be anything easy. And as much as you guys are, you know, trade deadline junkies and stuff like that, trying to get your fix in, I think there's a big percentage chance that the Kings do nothing.
And agreed.
It's crickets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think you're very much right because, well, first of all, I mean, Blake's more or less said as much, and the Kings are tight against the cap. And again, like, one of their biggest assets right now to trade are probably Roy, who's a pending UFA, who you can't just sell. I don't think you should just sell for assets, future assets. Spence, who, boy, like I said before, you better be getting something legit coming back. And again, I guess Kaliev, right? He's been a disgruntled, that's harsh, but like the kid wants to play and he's not playing. So, you know what I mean?
Counting his fist.
Right. So.
And then when you do play him, you don't play him on the power play where is his best.
Yeah, I thought that was strange. I would have liked to see him get some power play time. So I think Kaliev, I still think Kaliev's got, I mean, his value is not what it probably was a couple of years ago. I still think he could be a decent piece here. I think he can be a piece to get something. So I think those are probably your three biggest assets. And the problem with the latter, with Spence and Kaliev, is they don't make any money. So you can't bring anything in because of where they're at with the cap. I haven't looked at cap friendly. I know they got some LTIRs right now, but I don't know that those will be a factor come trade deadline time. So I don't think you can bank on that. So I don't know.
Not if you want to activate Lizotte too.
Exactly. So I really don't think that they have the ability to.
Well, what about trade. My tweet the other day, right? Getzel is on a team that's not winning. Penguins aren't doing anything. Right. So you acquire him, his LTIR money, to get you through because it's a 6 to 8 week, right? That puts you right up against it. Oh, he needs more time.
Back, like, right after the trade deadline. So I don't know. Or maybe,
it.
Maybe
I thought it was four. I thought it was 6 to 8 weeks, but
like mid March. Yeah.
But then, he's had a setback, and then, oh no. And whatever, you know, and then all of a sudden,
Mark Stone situation all over again.
Yeah. Like, why not? Like, get some, like,
I'm all for it. Yeah.
If I was a team, and then you have $5 million LTIR money, that allows you to make another trade to go get whatever goal you want. Like, let's just dump it all in. Let's, you know, Boston Tea Party this, F England. Let's just pour it all into the ocean and into the season and go for it. Why not?
I mean, I'm all for the LTIR playing around. I feel like the Kings are kind of doing that right now, actually, a little bit.
With for sure.
Lizotte. I feel like there's a little bit of that going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially to get Arvidsson back. Yeah, absolutely. But this thing too, especially with Arvidsson back, and we have Lizotte who's going to come back soon. So, I mean, you kind of look at the lineup the way it is, and for as much as maybe we get disappointed at Trevor Lewis playing over some other younger players, I feel like they're pretty solid in a lot of positions. I mean, at least the top nine is the best it's probably ever been all year. Probably the best it will be all year. So I like it, everything, mm-hmm. the way they're figured out. They're trying. It seems like they're trying to figure out someone to play with Kopitar and Kempe.
Nice segue there, Russ.
We saw, yeah, there we go. We saw Moore there. We saw Fiala there. We saw Cali there. Like, there's a bunch of trying to, I mean, especially since once they took Byfield down the third line. But, yeah, the top line with Arvidsson back now.
Yep.
I mean, the nice line has been humming. I know Fiala played there a little bit more than Moore today. But even then, like, I mean, we talked a little bit about Victor Arvidsson's return and tried to hype him up a little bit. I don't know if we hyped him up enough, to be honest with you, because not alone, but his impact individually in the roster and in the lineup, especially his first game in New Jersey, he looked incredible. Looked like he was shot out of a cannon, just going after Jack Hughes. It was great to have him around. But the way he's able to not only affect his line mates, but just affect the rest of the lineup now. I mean, we're talking about Byfield playing with Dubois, and we've never had the chance to have that conversation because of you're missing a top nine forward there. And now that you have that, I mean, the Jim Hiller's got a lot of toys, new toys he can play with right now. But, I mean, Victor Arvidsson's just kind of single him out a little bit. I mean, dude, he's looked so good, so fresh. Just the energy, everything we've been kind of noticed with Victor Arvidsson since he's been a King has been laid out on the ice each game so far. And I think there's one thing that I forgot myself. I don't know if anyone else had thought about it, but I mean, we're talking about a player who's also going to be a pending unrestricted free agent in the offseason.
Yeah.
So he's playing for a new contract. He's playing that. He's got to show the rest of the league that he's not some player who's going to be hampered by back surgeries each season. He's got to show the league that, hey, I can still be a $4, $5, $6 million forward in the league. So we're going to get a motivated Victor Arvidsson looking for a new contract like at that too.
For sure.
Is that something that you're, and I know we're not in the off season yet, but you know, is that something that you're willing to do is re-sign the 30-plus-year-old Victor Arvidsson, or you kind of,
I mean, if I'm the Kings, I'm not. I mean, it kind of seems like the way that the roster is kind of figured out right now, unless they figure it out and kind of can squeeze Arvidsson in there, I would expect Roy to be gone, and I would expect Arvidsson to be gone just because I expect them to get new deals, at least Roy get a hefty new deal, and most likely Arvidsson just the way the salary cap is going. So, I mean, I'm totally cool with it. Just like if they both want to walk in the offseason, it is what it is, and you got some young forwards that probably could take their place, but – hey, I'll take a motivator.
Demo, Turcotte, Alex, Akil Thomas, Chromiak. I mean, I know they're not going to be playing at Victor Arvidsson's level right now, but, I mean, you have to eventually give some of these guys a shot.
Depending on how Arvidsson's season ends, I wouldn't be surprised to see him take, like, a one-year prove-it deal or a two-year deal, I guess. I'm sure he's going to want more. Yep. I just don't know who gives him a lot more as he's going to be entering his age 31 season. Like, who's handing him a 5-6 year deal? Like, if the Kings could get him on like a 1 or 2 year deal, yeah, I can see that. I'm open to it, but I'm not expecting it because there's probably going to be somebody real quick.
Has he ever won?
What's the finals? Nashville.
They lost it. Yeah, they lost in the cup final to.
So maybe that, I mean.
Or Western Conference final, maybe?
No, they went to the final.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, they beat San Jose in the Western Conference finals, I believe, and then they lost to Pittsburgh.
So, I mean, that's a person that's over 30 in sports. I mean, trophy jumping or hopping or whatever you want to call it, or hunting. You know, that can
be. It just depends. Because
if
he ends the season really strong, has a good playoff, like, then he's going to get a multi-year deal and at five per, and let somebody do that. That's perfectly fine. Real quick, I want to touch on something that Shankmaster said earlier. We've got a 42% like to view ratio. So let's up that a little bit, hit the like button as Shankmaster mentioned, but yes, the Arvidsson, I think we were right to downplay it just because guys coming off a back surgery hasn't played a game. I think it'd be a little unfair to see him to expect him to step in and be like, oh, he's going to be Victor Arvidsson of hey, like, no, I mean, it's going to take a little bit, but he's come out hot. The line looks good. You know, he's playing well. And I think that's a really, really big, it just adds that much more depth to where that third line, you know, doesn't have to have kind of a revolving door of a Anderson Dolan or a Grundstrom or a Kaliev. It can be Byfield right now, at least playing with Dubois and Laferriere, because you got Arvidsson up in the top six again. So I think it really does help some things. I like it. I think he's been really good. So I'm definitely, it's a huge addition to the Kings top six and top nine in general. Like, it's just a really, really good, it lengthens the lineup. You mentioned how this is probably the best the top nine on paper has been. And now you've got a lot of options for the fourth line. Really? I mean, you can kind of mix and match. It's a similar conversation with Englund. It's kind of sad that the one guy that should be mixed and matched and in and out of lineup isn't, but again, here we are. We can't have nice things, but they have options now for that fourth line, which is great. And credit to Turcotte too, by the way. I think he's playing some pretty good hockey. Today he seemed to get the short end of the stick with some ice time today, but up until
that's happened twice so far, and that was going to be my question. It's happened twice so far, and Hiller's been saying, "Hey, like special teams was the effect of that." Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they don't put him on penalty kill. Like he decent on the faceoff dot. He's a scrappy player. Like Lizotte has penalty kill time. Like seems like that would be a way to get him some ice time. But like we got too many penalties and it kind of just shortchanged him. And like it's been noticeable. Like it's not like a halfway. It's like, oh, he didn't play almost the entire second period. And then we're only down by one goal. So now we're going to shorten the bench. And like it doesn't seem like.
Yeah,
it's like a medium knob turn. It's on or off. You know,
face offs probably
has something to do with him not on the penalty kill.
Probably yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his face off, Russ. I don't know if you know offhand what he's at in the dot. But you look at these last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, even 7 games, 8 games. I mean, there's a lot, not a lot, not as much 5-on-5 time. I mean, there was 39 minutes of 5-on-5 time in that Devils game, 43 minutes of 5-on-5 time today. There's a lot of special teams.
He's at 54% this year.
Yeah, so that's so. I think though, with Turcotte, it's probably a situation, Randon, where you're coming into it where you've got kind of an established group of killers. I think the penalty kill is one where you're going to lean on guys you trust rather than throw a kid in there. Do I think he can do it? Yes, I do think he can do it, Randon. But I sort of understand it, and this does happen. It happens at my level where you've got guys that don't play special teams and they just get lost in a game where there's a lot of penalties and it sucks because there's not a whole lot you can do. You try to find a spot here and there, but there's times where you kind of lose them a bit.
He seems like a player that though they were doing wing rotations today because of the penalties, you know, where Kaliev was up on the first line and stuff like that. He's played wing before.
Fair point. Yeah.
I'd like to see that. Like throw him up there just for a shift on a wing with somebody else, you know, and then
good point. I think so. Especially, I don't think that would hurt. Sorry, Russ, but I don't think that's a bad idea, Randon, just because kind of wouldn't mind seeing Lizotte play or Turcotte play the wing when Lizotte comes back. So,
right.
Unless they just for some reason don't want him on the wing. I don't know if that's a thing. Like if
like an Lizotte organizational comes, thing,
like they just listen, he's a center. I don't know if that's. But I would love it if Lizotte comes back and Turcotte can stay in the lineup on his wing. So, yeah, Randon, that's a good point. I wouldn't mind seeing him on the wing a little bit here and there.
Lewis with Lizotte and Turcotte doesn't sound bad. I mean, we're saying that just because we don't expect him to pull Lewis out of the lineup.
Right.
But if you have a choice between Anderson Dolan, Turcotte, Grundstrom, Kaliev on the other side.
It's Turcotte.
Probably lean to Turcotte. Anderson Dolan's been okay.
I'm a John guy. Better. You guys know that.
Yeah. But I think Turcotte I'd probably choose over that. I think with Turcotte, I'm just kind of glad that he's playing, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. We're seeing him healthy, which is good. I don't think expectations obviously weren't that high for Turcotte this year. And to him, just to make an impact, he had that really fun game in Nashville with the goal and the assist. So I think that's – I don't want to say if that's like his only big moment of the regular season, that's like I'm cool with it. But even then, like – like that's what we've been saying with Turcotte this year. It's just like as long as he's playing and healthy, that's great. Yep. Hey, if they want to send him back down to the AHL after this, and once Lizotte comes back and go with the rotation on the other wing, it is what it is. But then you come back next year, you have an experienced Turcotte who's got NHL games in under his belt. And if let's say Lizotte doesn't re-sign and he ends up walking, then you have a fourth line center that can probably fit in. But yeah, I mean, just kind
of. I think he needs more than 7 minutes of ice time.
Yeah, it's just tough right now. The thing with Hiller is he rolls with the guys that he feels like are rolling and the best time in the game. Like he said, it's so weird. He said that his first question about Dubois was, I don't know if you guys remember, when he talked about Dubois, he said if Dubois has a good night, then he's going to continue to play. And he kind of mentioned too right after that, if someone else is having a good night, then they're going to play. And we're kind of seeing that, right? We're seeing like the two games with Byfield, the game against New Jersey and I believe the game against Buffalo. There's only been three times in Byfield's career where he's played over 19 minutes. Those were two of the games. So we're seeing Hiller just play the guys that are playing well that night. And We didn't really see Dubois too much today because he was having somewhat an off night. But even though their line plays the most because you got Byfield in their side. So, I mean, I like these rotations that Hiller's rolling with. I like we're seeing him just not be afraid to just break up lines and throw out a mix. I think after a penalty kill, we saw Fiala with Arvidsson, and I think Clark was on the ice too at the same time. And man, those three together on the ice brings some electricity. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what Hiller kind of concocts going forward here, especially once you get a player like Lizotte back in the lineup.
Yeah, and not afraid to play because he had a good game, and then he put Byfield out on 3-on-3. You know,
we've been asking for that.
And it didn't work out right in the beginning, but him and Dubois were out there right away, you know. And so yeah, I do like that. Like, I guess we're tying a bow on the Hiller tenure because we took the long route to get here. But I like his willingness to move things in game, throw different forwards for a shift or two. He seems to be able to get a good pulse of how the team's playing, and if you get rewarded ice time based on, and that's what my tweet was when he first saying, like, hey, I'll give you ice time based on how you're playing. And then the line that where was this before he got the coaching job? Anyways, where that third line they scored all the goals or whatever, but Turcotte was rolling and they gave them plenty of ice time. You know, I don't know if that was right, if that was the first game of Hiller's or if that was right before, but the point is that he's noticing when players are playing better and then kind of tinkering a little bit and then shoving that line out there a lot more.
I think, and I think with that is I wasn't expecting anything drastic from a system standpoint because you got these guys that have been used to this for a couple of years now. I don't think you're in a playoff spot, right? It's not as if you've got to like really push a panic button per se, maybe refine some things.
Well, we already like, pushed that button. Yeah,
we did, but he didn't need to. And I think, like you said, Brandon, you used the word make some tweaks here and there. And then, you know, he kept a lot of stuff roster wise has been kind of the same. But now we're slowly starting to see, because I think he's going to take a couple of games to get his feet wet, get a good foundation under him, how he's seeing things from his new position. And we're starting to see him throw some things out there in part to maybe get something going, in part because guys are playing well and he wants to get a more ice time, in part because he's probably kind of just trying to figure out what is going to work. And I think we'll continue to see little tweaks like that, Randon. I don't know that there's going to be anything drastic, but I think the team has played really well under him. Overall, I mean, it's been five games. They're 4-1. The first two, I know they beat Edmonton, but the first two weren't great. I take the win with Edmonton as being a good win, but I didn't love the process. But the last three, I thought, have been pretty good games against good road teams. So I think it's been good. And, you know, we'll see how the next – I know, Randon, you said they got a tough stretch coming up here. So, you know, we'll see how that goes.
A lot of games, but we should have 6 points at home. They're playing Columbus, Nashville, and then the Ducks.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, well, you look at Tankathon.
But then they go on the road. They go on the road after that. And then they play Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver, three games in four nights. So
yeah, you look at Tankathon. I don't know if you guys ever go to tankathon.com. They have the easiest strength of schedule, or the second easiest strength of schedule for the rest of the year. So
doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it should be – there's a lot of winnable games coming up for the Kings. And like Brandon said, these next three at home should be wins. So, I mean, I say that with a lot of regret probably since we've seen how they play.
You said that with a question mark is what you said.
Those games
I'm Ron Burgundy. Kind of,
yeah. But I don't know. I guess one more thing I wanted to talk about too is the response from Kopitar. After the Buffalo game, I mean, goes -6 in Buffalo, and you see people like talking about we need to sit him and pull him down to the third line, which I mean, I probably got caught lost in that too, which maybe just talk about more about if you want to give other people more minutes, which is totally fine with me. But I mean, his response, last three games, 2 goals and an assist +2 that pass
looked
today.
Really good tonight.
Oh man, he looks great tonight. The last couple of games has looked excellent. So I mean, for him to respond after that Buffalo game. I'm sure it was kind of weighing on him a little bit. Never had probably his worst performance of his career in terms of plus minus. So, he's looked pretty good.
I don't know if you heard on, if you listened to 32 Thoughts, but Elliot Friedman said that Kopitar being minus six was a conversation like around the league. In other locker rooms, at pregame skates, like, yeah, is it true? Kopitar was like, that's how highly respected he is. I don't know if it was Friedman, if it was Merrick, but either way, it was mentioned on that pod. Like, it was a topic of conversation amongst other players around the league in their morning skates or whatever, pregames, whatever. That just kind of speaks to the, how much respect Kopitar has around the league.
Yeah, I like Holden 92's comment too, that his minus six was kind of overblown,
because it was overblown.
Players around it really was. Yeah. I mean, some of the other giveaways, Dowdy's giveaway was horrible. Mikey had a bad game. That pair had a bad game. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's good to see him respond.
Was it overblown? We got shellacked.
Yeah, but I think
no, his individual performance was overblown. Like,
yes,
his minus six, but the team, it was pathetic.
I don't know. I mean, he's been bad. I mean, outside a couple of games, he's been bad. He hasn't been, I mean, whether that's injury, whether that's whatever, before the break or whatever, he wasn't playing good. No,
he wasn't.
So
I totally agree.
So, I mean, I think the fact that, I brought this up last season in the tinfoil hat segments that we were having, like, is the downfall of Kopitar ever going to happen? And when it does happen, are we going to be caught with our pants down of, like, we don't have a number one seed? Right, because Deneau's not that guy. PLD hasn't been playing that way. And at that time we were talking, we didn't even have PLD. Velarde was there. Like, he's not a center. Like, are we going to be caught with our pants down and not have anybody to lead this team? We saw that a little bit this year. Whether that's injury or not, he wasn't playing. He played, it's probably his worst hockey that I've seen over a month stretch. And that's why I think that's why they made the trade for PLD. Now, whether he can be a number one center or not is a future conversation, but it's kind of like, is this the end of it for him?
Let me ask you this though. Let me put it this way with regards to the 1C and that whole conversation. Because you're right. Kopitar is probably not. You look at some of the top centers and look at some of the top centers in the division. He's not quite at that level. Okay, let's be fair. But I don't think the Kings, I said not that they don't care about that. The Kings are looking at it, in my opinion, with the addition of Dubois, the Kings aren't going to beat you with upper echelon talent. The goal for the Kings is to beat you with the depth. That's down the middle. That's on the back end. That's what they're looking at. So I think the Kings are looking at it as, we may not have a 1C, but we got 3 2Cs, right? So they're looking at it as, because the one thing the Kings, I think, do lack when compared to a lot of other teams, and especially cup contending teams, is they don't have stars, like legit game breaking stars. But I think they're built in a way that's going to try to beat you with depth. I don't know how well that's going to work, but so you're not wrong, Randon. I think the fact that, Kopitar is probably a back end 1C at this stage of his career, but I think the Kings understand that, and that's why they went and got Dubois, is the fact that, okay, we may not have a 1C right now, but we've got, like I said, 3 2Cs, and they're going to try to beat you with the depth rather than the upper part of a lineup. So, again, we just talked about how Quentin Byfield's on the third line with Dubois. There's not a lot of third lines in the league that can come at you with that. So that's how the Kings are going about this. That's not to say, like, dispute per se, Randon. It's just, I think that's how they're looking at this.
Yeah. I was listening to the Penguins broadcast today, and they talked about, like, they're mentioning all these names that are on the Kings. They're like, man, this team is just loaded with talent. And it's not high end talent, but there's a lot of good, they've got
three second lines. They've got
exactly, which is totally fine. Yeah.
Or three back end first lines. If you like, not great first lines, but like, what I mean? Like,
I think there's two things that also could be true, right? Kopitar's in the back end of his career, he's not as good as he was in his prime.
Sure.
But you look at like other teams, are not without fault, especially with high end players, right? You look at Edmonton when the McDavid Draisaitl line isn't going, like that team is horrible. Like they can't, because they don't have the depth to compete, right? And then you see them in the playoff game in some third periods when the game is tied, they'll roll two lines. And McDavid playing 30 minutes.
Like McDavid and Draisaitl were playing 30 minutes in that series.
Yeah. And so like the Kings can't have Kopitar playing 25 minutes a night like he was in January. Like they need to rely on the depth, like you said, Joe. And so I think there's positive negatives, right? Because, yeah, you don't have that line that can just take over a game on night in and night out. But the Kings have three lines that could potentially have a good game and be a backbreaker for a team. So in a seven-game series, I don't know if one's better than the other because,
it's the age-old question.
It is what it is.
Versus the Stars, yeah.
So, I mean, at least I'll say, like, finished with Kopi with this is he played 17 minutes in Buffalo, obviously the minus six, but the next three games, 20 minutes, 21 minutes, 21 minutes, and he's probably looked the best he's looked in quite a while. Like, I'm with you, Randy. Like, I think before the Buffalo game and even end the Buffalo game, he hadn't looked good at all, and that's why there were questions about injuries. It's like, okay, this Kopitar playing hurt. There's got to be something else going on here, and then it all culminated with that Buffalo game, but I mean, the last three games, he's answered the bell. He's responded well, and I think he deserves a little bit of praise for that. But as far as the future 1C, like, the way Byfield's been playing, like, I have no concern right now with the future 1C because I see him as, like, Byfield's going to be a legitimate, like, superstar in the league the way he's been playing right now. He's putting up, like, those type of numbers and especially the skill set that he has and just the fact that he's only 21. He's 6'5" already, and he's going to get even probably bigger, which is insane to think about. Like, I'm not scared at all for the future aspects of the Kings needed star talent. I mean, they'll have to develop probably a little bit more once Kopitar leaves, but the next 2 years, we'll just have to ride Kopitar, I guess, to get hopefully 16, 20 minutes a game.
Right now, Byfield's on pace for 28 goals and 66 points.
Yeah. Money.
Which is none what of us I wanted from him. Well, yeah, I said he's going to have to. I didn't expect that, but I said this is what I demand out of him was over 60.
Yeah, Randy wanted 60. Yeah, for sure.
You wanted it. Yeah. I don't think I was on the fence of like 45, like totally cool with it. But I mean, the things that I'm seeing from him, like it's.
This is the step that we needed. We wanted to see. This is the step. And I agree. I think the future 1C, I think it's still conceivable to expect that to be Byfield, but I think it's really smart how the organization is handling this. They're not forcing him into the spot where he's not ready for. They're letting him kind of just grow and evolve with a little bit less pressure, a little bit less, you know, responsibility, if you will. And it's working, and he's been excellent. And I think it's going to be an easier transition for him once he's built up this. He's got years under his belt of experience, a couple years under his belt of experience as a winger, but he's also played top line minutes as a winger. So I think that's only going to help him as he eventually, I expect him to eventually transition back, but who knows? I mean, if he's this good as a winger, I mean, I guess it depends on what the roster looks like in the future, but yeah, I still think there's reason to be pretty optimistic that he can be the future 1C the way he's going.
Or you could just sign Draisaitl as a unrestricted free agent when he's free.
There we go.
Do you think the failure of handling Vilardi as a center had anything to do with how they handled Byfield as a center?
No, I mean the
teams were in different spots, but Vilardi played 10 games and he had a good 10 games, and then they shoved him into the 2C role, and like then he kind of crumbled there, and like they've kind of been milking Byfield on the wing all the way up. Like they've never thrusted him into stardom, like Joe said. So like, do you think that had anything to do with it, or because the teams were in different spots in their development?
I think that's it.
That's the
reason.
There was no opportunity for Byfield to assume like right now. I mean, obviously
there was last season. He could have played 3C.
He could have played 3C.
I mean, even then, the third line center. You mentioned Vilardi was everyone's expecting him to be the second line center. Like he's going to be the next, like, you have Kopitar Vilardi now for the future. And like everyone's like, okay. Well, we were all excited about it. But then with Byfield, they're like, okay, we'll give him the 3C, which is a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I think like what Joe said, like the way he's playing the wing right now, there's no reason to kind of force him back into a center position, just kind of leave him on the wing. But I don't know if it's something they fixing their mistake from Vilardi at all?
I think it's a fair question though, Brandon, and I would say it's more to do with the situation. But that said, I think it's still a bad process. They put a guy in, and that does, like, same thing with Bjornfoot. They threw him in. You wonder what Bjornfoot's development, what his progress would have been if he just was in Ontario, or at least playing lower minutes. He was playing with Doughty, right, early in his career. Like, that's a lot to ask. And I think that maybe some of these guys you could make the case for is rushed. And then obviously Vilardi had so many injuries to deal with too. But I think of Bjornfoot and Vilardi in that, frankly, Brandon. So it's a reasonable question.
So I want to ask you guys this. I'll start with you, Brandon. You go long-term, eight-year, $7.5 million deal for Byfield, or you sign him to a three-year bridge? He's thinking.
Eight-year deal. I would do it. I mean, but I think the 8-year deal is better for Byfield and how he looks at it. The bridge deal is better for the team and to win a cup. So, like, what's the ultimate goal? Okay. Like, because you have to make room for other players to fill in. Like, if you're losing Arvidsson, you're losing Roy. Like, okay, yeah, now he's making essentially almost league minimum now. That $7 million goes directly to Byfield. The team's in the same cap constraint that they are in, right? So, how much it goes up, I don't know. But, like, yeah, you make the argument that, okay, yeah, you're getting a better deal for Byfield because then he could potentially be a $12 million center in 3 years. Mm-hmm. But the team is less likely to win a Stanley Cup because you don't have other money for other assets. And who knows what the cap is going to go up. I forget what it is. But, like, $5 million helps get $2 million for another player, right? And you're going to be losing two most likely. So – it sucks. Like, you have to pick the team over a player or longevity, but I think that both have their positives and both have their downfalls for the team.
What do you think, Joe? Same question.
Yeah, 8-year deal. If you get an 8-year at 7.5, I mean, you're talking about a guy you just said is on, at 21 years old, is on pace for 66 points. He's having a breakout season right now. So all things being equal,
playing like 15 minutes a night,
it's going to continue. Hopefully, we talk about prospect growth and that stuff's not always linear, but if he's going to continue on this trajectory, 7.5, that's a steal. So, because that'll be double digits, especially if he moves back to a center position, give me the 8-year deal.
Are you an RFA until you're what, like 27, 26, or 26 years in the league?
25, I believe.
I think it's 26, isn't it? Or seven years in the
years
league.
Of experience too. Yeah.
So it could be 25, maybe, Russ, if you started in the league pretty much year one.
Yeah.
But then there's a benefit there for both players, right? If he does a 5-year deal, and right before he's a UFA, then you sign him to that long contract.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, we wake up tomorrow morning and the Kings announce some long-term deal with Byfield. Like, to be honest with you, I think you have to just try to. I'm sure Rob Blake's trying to do the same thing at this point.
Yep. I don't want to bridge.
I feel like it helps the team. It doesn't, like Brandon says, it maybe hurts maybe the next 2 years, especially when you have Kopitar still on the books for $7 million too, because then your top three centers are, what, 8, 7.5, and 7? So,
well, Deneau. Still a lot.
Oh, and Deneau, yeah, Deneau too.
So 5.5.
Yeah, and you have 5.5. So some hefty contracts still in the books. But, I mean, you think about how that deal is going to look like 3, 4, 5 years from now. I mean, man, if you're talking about a salary cap that's going to be close to like 95, maybe even 100 million, and you're paying Byfield $7.5 million.
Well, that's how Boston won. I mean, you look at Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasta were all making $7 million apiece. At the same time, and they took a gamble on that. So.
The Kings need to. Some of these young guys need to start hitting too. I'm a big LeFerrier guy, but we're getting to the point. I don't know if we start losing. Like, we're talking about losing Arvidsson and Roy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, some of these prospects we're going to start. We're going to probably need more out of Turcotte. And this is all not now, but soon we're going to need more out of Turcotte. I mean, Hellenius, we'll have to bring Kyle Garcia on here more to talk about the rain a bit more. But yeah, we'll start to see some of these, need that prospect pool to start churning some talent.
100%.
Well, it's a team thing. So, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Like, guys performing on cheap deals. That's
exactly.
I mean, you can probably go through the list of teams that have won cups, and you've probably got guys that are decent contributors making $1 million, you know, real cheap deals that are playing down in the lineup. Like, and sometimes those are young players, prospects, whatever. And that's where the Kings, you know, they haven't thread the needle of, they didn't blow it up, right? They didn't do a total tear down and rebuild. They tried to thread the needle because they had a really good prospect pool. They had some high picks. They still had Kopitar, Doughty. So they were trying to kind of thread that needle and trying to make it fit. That only works is if Byfield's doing what he's doing now, say a year ago, if Clark is up, say a year ago or whatever it is. And, you know, I guess some of this could have happened before, but they preferred Alex Edler. And things like that, Andreas Englund. So you need these guys to perform at, you know, young, cheap deals. I think that's what really, really helps kind of, you want to fill your depth. In my opinion, fill your depth of your roster with upside, with guys that can pop, with your Turcotts, with your Clarks, with your Spences. Those are the guys I think that's what's going to elevate you and elevate the bottom part of your lineup. I think the Kings are doing it wrong, but we'll see if it ends up mattering come playoff time.
This offseason is going to be strange, huh? It's going to be really, really strange. I mean, you have no goaltender signed next year. We're talking about a Byfield contract extension, Roy and Arvidsson, Lizotte is an RFA. Interesting times ahead. But let's be excited about right now, I guess.
Yeah.
We are excited. We got some W's today, and I think that's probably going to do it for us tonight. So thank you guys for coming in the chat. We were 80 strong for a long period of time. Smash that like button on your way out. You can follow all of our articles here at HockeyRoyalty.com. Please follow us on X at Hockey_Royalty, at JW Paterino, NHL Russell, at Random Commando 24, and all your rain coverage from Kyle at Kopitar 4HOF. Russell likes to go on X every once in a while for those chats, for the super chats there. So get on there. Those are also posted on our podcast, and we do some more live game watches as well. So just keep your ear to the ground for all the Kings knowledge. Hockey Royalty is going to be holding it down for the rest of the season. We're getting close, boys, to the trade deadline. Playoffs are right around the corner to see where the Kings end up and if we can make some noise. So thank you very much for coming into the chat tonight. And as always, go Kings, go.